Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone. First, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the Whadjuk land that we are meeting on today and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. I would also like to pay my respects to everyone living with HIV and acknowledge that the challenges that they've had to face and to recognise that there remain significant barriers to fulfilling their right to a dignified and just life. Service needs for people living with HIV. I think both John and Jennifer have really given a good overview of what ageing is from a clinical and broader perspective. So that's certainly part of what I'm going to look at today. But I'd just like to start off with a few numbers. These are numbers from the Kirby report. The numbers are not new. We've been through the numbers again and again and again. But what's important to note in here is this is where we start to find the nuances. And in here are the cohorts that have service needs. Within each of these groups, male-to-male sex groups, the heterosexual sex groups, the injecting drug use and other exposures, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, people born in Southeast Asia, people born in Sub-Saharan Africa. In here, there are growing new cohorts, and I'd like to acknowledge the question about the minority groups, I guess, living with HIV and how we are looking to service them. In each of these cohorts, new service modalities must be determined and established. It's tricky to think about how we're going to address the full spectrum of what people are needing, but there are definitely areas, clear areas within each of these cohorts that we need to be looking at. Of course, the ageing, I won't harp on this by any stretch of the imagination. I think the last two presenters really gave us a very clear indication of the challenges that we're faced by people living with HIV and the ageing and an ageing population. It is going to be the driver of so much of our engagements, and I specifically think about the areas of my aged care and the NDIS, and as general mainstream society starts to bring new policies on board, how do we support our friends and our clients living with HIV to engage in those new areas? So Bobby Goldsmith Foundation, who I'm the CEO of, is predominantly based in New South Wales. So it's important, I think, we'll have a look at a little bit of New South Wales. In 2018, Positive Life New South Wales put out a HIV Complex Care in New South Wales consultancy report. With these were some of the findings. That fewer people are becoming infected, but people are living much longer. Measurable change in the backgrounds of people presenting to HIV services. Again, that's a much broadening of the demographic than has been for so long. A younger cohort of PLHIV who often are leading chaotic lives with significant mental health and AOD issues. There's a broader geographical residential distribution with limited commensurate service distribution. So in New South Wales, we do see that sort of nominally the inner city areas are the areas where the services have been focused on for such a long period of time. And yet, given financial pressure, people are leaving the inner city areas and moving to areas of that are better economically for them. And unfortunately, though, those services are not provided. So we have geographical issues that we have to address when it comes to service. And 14% of PLHIV with complex care needs receive support of medium to high intensity. So that's a pretty limited number of people. Now, there are many reasons for that. Some of it has to be with ability to access, but a lot of it has to do, I think, with funding and with focus that organisations such as mine and others can afford to put on, just given the funding landscape has changed. So I want to talk a little bit about Bobby Goldsmith. We're Australia's oldest HIV, our community-based HIV organisation. We're committed to providing client-centred care to help people living with HIV to thrive. Our role really is to provide the best client services we can. We have, over a period of time, adjusted had a transition in our service offering from 1984 when we started up until now, and that's commensurate with the evolution of HIV and how it's impacted upon people, and the pharmacology, I guess, that's gone along with that, that's made it, HIV gone from a terminal situation to a chronic condition. And so we've adapted and evolved, and we are necessarily considering in how we adapt and evolve, especially now, especially with new communities more increasingly visible, and as well new communities who are aging. To ensure evidence-based outcomes, to be a voice that influences public policy, and to ensure a sustainable future. I guess that the last one's really one of the most important things. I concur with John about funding and partners needed. I think the landscape is shifting and has shifted, and it's we are in a struggle. We are adapting, and I'll come to some of the ways that we have adapted as a service organisation to sustain, but it is complicated today. The principles of our service. So with MEEPA and JEEPA, I think it's we're fundamentally looking to ensure that people HIV thrive with dignity. We want to provide services that ensure that. We strongly believe in the MEEPA and JEEPA principles, but we are, I think, deficient as an organisation in certain areas of that. We think that it's important that we support people's access to employment within BGF. We have gone from a relatively small organisation. We now employ 50 people in service to PLHIV, and it's it gives us the opportunity to offer employment, but we are still not as nuanced around the emerging cohorts as we would need to be. We're still a pretty white organisation. We need to be. We are diverse in gender. We are diverse in sexual orientation. But I think we need to be really considering where are the future and where are these communities that we need to support. But fundamentally, and we also, as much as we take our client satisfaction surveys terribly seriously, and we really look to make sure that informs how we're evolving our practice. It's a yearly thing, and we have an informal review system. We're still a bit deficient around peer review and peer review groups and really being guided well. So as much as we think we espouse the MEEPA and JEEPA principles, I think there's a lot of improvement for BGF still at this point. But fundamentally, we're there to provide compassion, guidance and meaningful client-centred supports. The key component to engaging with BGF is you walk in the door and we're there to support you. You're living with HIV, we will support you any way that we think we can. But most importantly, we support you in a way that you are satisfied, that you feel like you have been heard, and that we design a program specifically around your goals and what you are capable of doing. We look at providing quality of life through client-centred care, support, reducing isolation and stigma for people living with HIV. I think that's, we work on a very care without judgment process. We have a very safe space. We are very welcoming and a very diverse community. We look to connect, support and empower people living with HIV. I'll come a little bit to the service timeline that we have here. This really gives us a sort of an idea of over a period of time as HIV evolved, how we responded in terms of the services. Originally, a lot of it was around financial assistance. People found they had lost their jobs. People had found they were in great financial difficulty, unable to afford things. Originally, the Bobby Goldsmith Foundation was a group of friends of Bobby Goldsmith himself who rallied around in his last days and ensured that he had comfort and some dignity and pleasure in his last days. And from that, people recognised that there was a greater need for that support. After that, so the financial assistance is sustained. We established respite care establishment, BG House. We've put casework on board. We've attempted to approach Indigenous HIV through Aboriginal fast tracking, though I'll come to that a bit later. We are nowhere where we need to be in engaging with the Indigenous community. When ARVs became free, a lot of our financial assistance was around providing people who couldn't afford to their ARVs, and we would financially support them to be able to afford their ARVs. In New South Wales, when ARVs became free, we were able to reserve our money and put finances to different things. But as it's evolved, that financial assistance is not sustainable. The funding landscape has shifted. People are not interested in giving BGF money anymore so that we can give cash to people. What people are interested in is an empowering situation, and we would probably argue that that's a correct approach, that people need to be empowered. People need to feel a sense of self-efficacy, that they get to choose what they want to do and that they are in control of the decisions around how they're evolving. And so really we're moving away from this charity or this welfare system much more to an empowering situation. We've taken on NDIS clients, and we'll talk to that a little bit, and we are expanding our reach geographically. So this is a little bit back in 2005, 2007. This is sort of what we provided: financial assistance, floating care to ensure housing, financial counselling, programs to assist clients getting back into the workforce, and BG House, which was where people were a respite service that was offered. Today, we've refined our service offering really down to five key areas. So casework, we work holistically with clients. We provide practical, emotional and financial support. We work with clients to create a support plan around the services that we provide, and we do refer them to other services if necessary. So we provide financial assistance, support letters, advocacy, budgeting, outreach, individual service agreements. We provide no interest loan schemes, work development orders and referrals to other service. In terms of case management, this is probably a growth area of ours, and we see that this is going to be the pillar of our support to various communities. There is a geographical need for us to go further, certainly in New South Wales. Currently, we are existing in Sydney. We have a foothold in Western Sydney. We will be in Lismore in the far north coast or the Northern Rivers area, and in Coffs Harbour in the mid-north coast. We also have some work in South Australia. But the case management we really see as a pillar of our community engagement. We put a case manager into place, and around that we then backfill with a number of the other services that we look to offer. So case management, it's a collaborative process of assessment, planning, facilitation and advocacy that focuses on enhancing the quality of life of the person living with HIV. And we achieve this by assisting clients to achieve their chosen lifestyle and life goals through individualised planning and support coordination. And that's really around making sure that we're a client-centred organisation. We use the Flinders program. It's a self-management model that is based on cognitive behaviour therapy, problem solving and motivational interviewing to help clients self-manage their chronic condition. Our case managers have expert knowledge and about HIV and the health and social systems. The case management duties are often, we look at referrals to support services, navigating complex systems such as My Aged Care, the NDIS, Health and Centrelink, legal and housing advocacy, support letters, financial and health literacy, intensive and ongoing advocacy support, engagement and relationship building and self-management support and goal setting. The community support services that we run, we provide practical hands-on support for clients in the community. We attend appointments with them, we provide medication prompts, we support clients with transport to appointments, reminders, assistance with daily living through shopping, cleaning, meal preparation, self-care prompting, and psychosocial support that addresses issues of isolation, mental health support, coaching to wellness and engagement with their community. The community side of things, the community support program is really a key service provision, and it's going to be an increasing key service provision. With the NDIS and with My Aged Care, we are able to leverage that to be able to provide further and further services that we may not be able to do with our current grant funding model. So we're really encouraged by that, but at the same time, we recognise that it's not a profit-driving process. If anybody, I imagine many of you have been approaching the NDIS processes and recognise that they can be challenging. We provide financial counselling, and we provide which is something that is a critical service. A lot of our complex clients are in a very difficult economic circumstances, and we ensure that they're able to budget. We can seek debt relief for them. And provide financial literacy and budgeting skills. We also help them navigate the welfare and superannuation systems. Finally, programs. We run a range of workshops and programs that offer opportunities for social engagement and provide the knowledge and skills that are needed to enable people living with HIV to take better controls of their lives. So it includes this positive self-management program. It includes Art Phoenix, creative writing, creative poetry. It includes nutrition programs and around Eat Well, Live Well. And it includes financial management, money-minded skills. So all in all, we've refined our service needs, and our as our client cohort ages, we are going to be needing to adapt to that. The age range is as you, it's probably, that's a terrible slide. I'm sorry about the colours on that. I didn't come out very well at all. I will simply concur with the previous two speakers in that ageing is a critical component for us, and our services need to adapt towards that. The current spread of ethnicity is increasing for BGF, and we need to consider how we need to adapt our service offering on a much broader cultural reach. And the gender spread at the moment, 88% male, 11% female, and 1% trans and gender diverse. So we need to, these are the key components of what we're thinking about when we think about what it is that our clients actually need. So the future service need considerations. The changing demographics, when it comes to ageing, in terms of service need, we're really looking at some key components. What is it to have sensitive aged care facilities and workers? What sort of trainings are we going to be looking for? How do we train our own staff? What do we demand and out of the standards of the public system? How do we try to keep people? A lot of people dread the idea of going into an aged care facility. How do we shift our service modality to provide an increasing in-home care service around my aged care and around the NDIS to provide people with the dignity that they can have by living at home? Navigating my aged care and the NDIS, peer support navigation is absolutely critical to this. I think we'd like to certainly acknowledge the work that's been done at A Positive Life New South Wales and NAPWA around how developing those facilities or capacities to be able to guide people properly through those processes so they get what they are is rightfully theirs. Culturally appropriate, more culturally and gender diverse approaches. I was really struck by Michael Brown and Carly Afat's conversation yesterday around their Aboriginal request to be served by people who understand and who can empathise with them on a very deep cultural level. Mm. I think that's something that BGF doesn't do very well. We still don't have a reconciliation action plan. We're still needing to provide even the basis of that, and that's something that we're going to be working on this year, really with a determination that we want to make sure that we reflect and we really do serve at the needs and the desires of our client cohort. Yep. Right. And sort of the other thing is the geographic dispersion is really how to engage with technology to prove outcomes. How do we counter the tyrannies of distance with our working modality? How do we put people into places on a regional basis? Can we look at technology to be able to provide a better service need and to provide more inclusiveness? But I want to come back pretty much, and I know Graham's going to talk to quality of life measure. I think that a standardised quality of life measure is going to be so critical to ensuring a good outcome and understanding the evolution of people and their service needs. Funding's key, but at the end of the day, it's really about peer support and navigation. I think that's going to be the most critical thing. But I'll leave it there.
Thank you.